Throughout the 60s and 70s, cops hunted down key figures of the Dixie Mafia, including its enigmatic ringleader, Kirksey Nix.
I'm interested in making money. I'm not interested in hurting people.
15 years into Kirksey's life sentence, the Dixie Mafia was practically folklore, but that would soon change. I'm Jed Lipinski. This is Gone South, a documentary podcast from C13 Originals, a Cadence 13 studio. Season 2, The Dixie Mafia. Available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Throughout the 60s and 70s, cops hunted down key figures of the Dixie Mafia, including its enigmatic ringleader, Kirksey Nix.
I'm interested in making money. I'm not interested in hurting people.
15 years into Kirksey's life sentence, the Dixie Mafia was practically folklore, but that would soon change. I'm Jed Lipinski. This is Gone South, a documentary podcast from C13 Originals, a Cadence 13 studio. Season 2, The Dixie Mafia. Available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We continue. This is Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. Now joining us is new head football coach at Nebraska. And that, of course, is Matt Rhule. Coach, first off, congratulations to you and your family. How you been?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing really well. It's been a whirlwind couple of days, but it's great to get started. Great to talk to you.
So you've been all over the place, Temple, Baylor. We know Carolina, and now you're going to Lincoln, Nebraska. When I introduce you, Matt Rhule, the new head football coach of the Nebraska Cornhuskers, just what are you feeling? What goes through your mind?
Well, I'm beyond excited. When you walk through this building every day and you feel the tradition and the excellence that's been here, it has an effect on you. And then begin to meet the team and the excitement of, hey, you know, we have a chance to start to build a team and get Nebraska back to where, you know, we want it to be. I'm excited for the challenge. I'm fired up to be here.
When you got let go from the Carolina Panthers, I heard a lot of rumors about Matt Rhule's coaching future. But initially, the first thing I heard was that you weren't going to get back into the game right away. And even Trev kind of said that after the press conference, that everything he heard from the start when he said he wanted Matt Rhule was Matt was going to take a year off. What changed once you start talking to Nebraska and now you're sitting in front of us as the head coach?
You know, I figured out quickly, Zach, that I was going to coach again, that I really missed the off-season program. I really missed the recruiting. I really missed spring ball. I really missed being on the sideline. And I said, well, why am I going to delay? You know, wherever I go, I'm going to have to build something special. Why would I delay it? But I was going to wait for the right thing. I wasn't going to, you know, try to fit a square peg into a round hole. And the very first time I talked to Trev Alberts, based on the questions he asked me, I was like, man, this guy gets it. And the more I talked to him, the more I realized that, you know, at Nebraska, I think it's going to be a fit because they know what I believe in. You know, really, at the end of the day, I'm the coach from Temple. You know, I want a gritty, tough football team, a tough football program. I want guys who love to work, and I want to help them off the field get great educations to be the men that they want to be, and on the field win and go to the National Football League. And that's Nebraska. That's its history. And so it felt like the right fit, and eventually it worked out.
You know how important it is getting a feel of the university, but when one of these searches go on, you kind of got to do it in an incognito mode. And that's very tough to do in our social media life with all the media members following you and everything like that. And sometimes you take a job and you can't go experience the school before you take it. Every job is different. But this one, since you were out of the game, I heard you say in your press conference, you kind of snuck into town. What were the details now, since it's official that you're the Nebraska coach, of Matt Rhule sneaking into town?
Yeah, you know, Julie and I just hopped on a little private jet and flew up here, and Trev Alberts' wife picked us up and kind of drove us around town, and we spent some time talking to, you know, Trev and his wife and seeing what Lincoln was all about. And the good thing was there was a game going on. So now Trev was actually at the game, but we had a chance to talk to him afterwards. So everybody that was in town was probably at the game or working to get ready for the game. So we were able to sneak around, see the town, see the facilities, and just left saying to ourselves, like, we didn't realize how nice Lincoln was. We didn't realize how big it was. We didn't realize how many things were here. And, you know, a major key for us was where do we want to raise our kids? And so we thought, hey, our kids will be happy here. We'll be happy here. We can recruit to this place. And the commitment to football, the fan base, the resources are out of this world.
If people followed you in college, they know, and you even said in this interview, you have a tough football team and you try to dominate at the line of scrimmage. But for the Nebraska fans that didn't see you at Temple, didn't really see a lot of you at Baylor, expand on that a little bit. when you get into the fall after all the hard work in the offseason, what Nebraska fans can really expect come September.
Yeah, you know, we want to be the most physical team, every game that we play. And, you know, we're a hardworking group. We're going to be a tough group. We want to compete. You know, when you watch us play, I don't want you to know if we're up by 20 or down by 20. You know, I want us, we play to one standard, and you know, we have to get to that. You know, we have to be able to run the football and create explosive plays through the running game into the passing game. We want to be excellent situationally, and we want to play great defense and special teams. And so our recipe has been to go find fast kids, big, strong kids that love football, teach them the game, teach them our system. It's one of the reasons why, Zach, so many guys have played so long in the NFL after playing for us, is we don't just teach them our system. We try to teach them the game, and we try to have systems that develop them for the next level. So we want to see guys play well here, win championships, but then also go on and have excellent careers afterwards.
You've always had the unique ability to find the guy that was overlooked and someone that wasn't properly rated, and not only know that they're going to be good, but then develop them. Like, I'll never forget when I went to one of those cold practices in the middle of winter, coming out of a fraternity house, probably a little hungover for being real, but you invited me down to practice. And you told me, watch Hassan Reddick. Hassan Reddick's going to be great. And then the next 2 years, you saw him develop and eventually become a first round pick. And he was a walk-on at Temple. How do you continue to develop these guys that are overlooked and may not have the most stars attached to their name?
Yeah, you know, we just try to find guys with traits, you know, guys who are, you know, have the right height, weight, speed, who have a unique characteristic, and then teach them the technique and teach them the game. You know, so much of, you know, the stars in recruiting, which is all great, happens when guys are freshmen or sophomores, and maybe, you know, I'm a late bloomer, maybe, hey, I'm a track kid, and we try to take those guys, and then our system of development is, you know, we're going to compete every day in the weight room, compete in conditioning, compete in the mat drills, as you saw, and compete in spring football. And even throughout the season, you know, we believe in going good on good. You know, iron sharpens iron. And if you want to become a great pro, you've got to pay the price in college. And, you know, guys who love football, it's not really paying a price. They're just getting better every day.
Matt Rhule here with us. What did you learn from your time, the almost 3 years in the NFL with the Carolina Panthers?
You know, I learned a lot. I mean, I learned a lot of X's and O's in football. I learned a lot about myself, you know, just how much, you know, you find out a lot about yourself when, you know, you're under a lot of pressure and when there's a lot of adversity and when people are, you know, when people are really heavily criticizing you, and you can either go into a shell or you can, you know, you can stay strong. And so for me, those were the things that I was most proud of. And that the team always stayed with me, that, you know, that I wasn't always perfect, but I never cracked. And so I learned a lot about what leadership looks like. You know, anyone can lead on a sunny day, you know, who can lead in the rain. And, you know, even to the very last minute that I was the head coach of the Carolina Panthers, you know, those players, they had my back and supported me. And that meant a lot. And so as I come here, I'm like, you know what? I have a plan. I'm resolute in that plan. You know, when I walked out of that meeting room after addressing the team, after being fired, Zach, I said to myself, well, you know, wherever I go next, I'm going to do an elite job. And so, you know, those are words. I have to go do an elite job now.
This has to mean that this is the most motivated that you've ever been, probably taking a new job. Cause you're at Temple, the whole team wanted you to be the next head coach. Then you leave Temple, you had success. You go to Baylor, you have success. Then you go to Carolina, and unfortunately you get shown the door. Does that mean this is the most motivated now that you've ever been in your coaching career?
You know, I don't know if motivate. I mean, I'd hate to say that I wasn't motivated before,
sure,
probably, but I would just say.
But that fire still burns.
Oh, no doubt. This is probably the most confident. I mean, it's like, I feel like I said it in the press conference. I feel like a piece of steel that was like, you know, put in the fire, man. Like, you know, like any lack of confidence, any mental weakness, all that, like it was all burned away from me, man. Like, it doesn't mean I'm humble. I'm always trying to learn. I'm just going to trust my assistants. But I tell you what, I know how much my staff and I are going to try to pour into the lives of these young people that are here. And so I know how much we're going to try to win a championship for Nebraska. I know now how hard we're going to work. And so I'm confident, but I'm also ready for a tremendous challenge, and I'm ready to work harder than I ever have.
Matt Rule, one of our affiliates is WFNZ in Charlotte. Just whenever you get fired or you take a new job, you don't always get to address those fans. Just what do you want to say to Panthers fans?
Oh, I just hope that Panthers fans get the coach that they deserve and the team that they deserve. And I hope they win the championship. You know, it's been a long time for them and they've come close, but they haven't been able to have one. You know, I went there feeling that sense of, hey, I want to bring this to the city of Charlotte. I want to bring this to the Carolinas. And, you know, it didn't work out, you know, and I hate that part of it. You know, my family's still in Charlotte. I consider Charlotte a key part of my life, but you know what? I wish them the absolute best. They deserve it. The fans deserve it. And I love those players. And I think that's a team, Zach, that has a chance to win the NFC South moving forward. There's a lot of pieces. There's a lot of good players, young players that are 3-1 right now in the NFC South. And they're probably a play away from being 4-0. So they'll be good for a long time. You know, I hope Scott Fitterer's given every opportunity to hire a great coach and they win.
You know, in the NFL, you either have the quarterback or you don't. I'm sure you got the question so many times. You see the articles, Matt Rule, you know, why didn't they trade up to go get Justin Herbert with the Lions? Why didn't they draft Justin Fields or Mac Jones? Just like, how do you kind of reflect on that when people write articles and they speculate on why you didn't take those guys?
Yeah, you know, I think hopefully when people look back on my time, they'll say like, you know what? He never threw anyone under the bus. He never made an excuse. Mm-hmm. You know, no decision was made at the Carolina Panthers when I was there that was made by me unilaterally. I didn't make a draft pick. I didn't make one draft pick. You know, I had a lot of input. I had a lot of feeling. Some things were said early on. And so a lot of criticism came my way. And I never, you know, I'm going to be old someday and say, you know what? I never took a shot at anybody. So when articles come out and, you know, they're saying Matt did this, Matt did that, you know what I've done? I never wanted to be a distraction to this year's team. Cause I signed up to coach this team all year and it didn't work out. I'm in a great place right now, but I'm never, ever going to respond to some negative article about me or some negative story about me. Cause that could distract Frankie Louhu and JC Horn and the guys that I promised I'd give my best to for this whole season. So, you know, I think we build a pretty good team in a lot of areas. And I feel like, you know, maybe next year, if they make one or two key moves, some great things would happen. But there was never a time when we had a huge deal on the table or something. And I said, no, we're not doing it. That's not the way the organization was run. The organization, every decision was made by the general manager, the owner, and the head coach. And I bore the brunt of that. And I'm happy to do it because I loved our players and I wanted our players to always be able to go out. And you know, if people want to say, hey, Matt made these decisions, if that helps other people, then I get it. Because you know what, that's what a leader does. A leader takes responsibility when things don't go wrong. I was happy to be the leader there. I'm not anymore. I'm the leader here now. And so I have to have great vision moving forward.
Now, getting back to Nebraska, the new head football coach of Nebraska, Matt Rule here with us. This is a different game, but I think it provides even more opportunities now. And I still don't know what you can do, what you can't do with NIL. It's the most confusing thing in the world. I know you always had your eyes on college football scouting and all that stuff and following the relationships you made at Temple and Baylor. But how do you kind of attack this animal on the fly when you hear the transfer portal and how easy it is to transfer now and then also name, image, and likeness?
Yeah, you know, I got fired so early that I've been able to kind of study it as I go. And the thing that everyone else is telling me, my friends in college are like, hey, we don't understand everything about it yet because it's a never-changing target. I think it's great that young people, if they're not happy where they are, can go somewhere else. They have the right to be happy. I think it's great that if you're a good player, you know, you could make money off of the way that you play. You know, Bryce Young should be in a commercial if they want him to be in one. So I have, you know, philosophically, I have no issue with these things. You know, to me, it's about how best to manage it, how best to get a great roster, but also how also have a great locker room. And so we're going to be involved in all of it. But at the end of the day, still the key to me is always, do players have a good experience? Do they feel like they're getting the most out of you as a coach? And do they have a chance to win? And so we're going to utilize those things, but we're also going to try to build a really good culture that gives guys a chance to win.
I know you're focused on what you could individually control at Nebraska, and we know how much of a force the Big Ten can be. We see that USC and UCLA are joining. You don't know how many more schools are going to be joining. You don't know if this is going to shift from a Power 5 to a Power 2, a Power 3. We've talked about this for months. Is that tough to take a job when you don't know what the conference is necessarily going to look like 5 years down the road or so?
Well, I think it's one of the reasons why this was job was so attractive, because I know this. I don't know what's going to happen in college football, but I know the Big Ten is going to be a power player, you know? And so as the college football playoff expands, I wanted to be in one of the conferences where I knew, hey, we have a chance to compete at any point. And you know, I think moving forward as the playoff, if playoff games are held at home and, weather is involved and all those different things, I'm excited about where we're positioned, late in the year. So I know this, the University of Nebraska, historically, facility-wise, fan base-wise, alignment, leadership, no matter what conference we're in, we should be a competitive in that conference to win the conference and have a chance to go on to the playoffs. We're not there right now, but we should be, in time. And so I'm excited to see what happens, but I know this, the Big Ten will be strong.
Wrap it up with Matt Rhule. A few more questions for the Nebraska head football coach. When it comes to staff, what can you tell us about staffing? We see a bunch of rumors, a lot of guys that I'm very familiar with. Who's going to be joining you that you could tell us right now?
Yeah, I brought a bunch of guys that have been with me for a long time, who kind of know the process and the brand. And some of them are some of the younger guys that have kind of really grown in coaching, and I'm proud of them. So, Evan Cooper, here is going to work with us with our defensive backs, tremendous evaluator and recruiter. Terrence Knighton, Pot Roast, is going to coach the defensive line. Excited for him. On offense, Marcus Satterfield, coming fresh off of huge offensive output against Tennessee and beating Clemson, made the decision to leave a great South Carolina program and come with us and run the offense for us. So Ed Foley, who's been one of the premier special teams coordinators. So having those guys join me, EJ Barthel, great Northeast recruiter. Nebraska's always had great New Jersey ties. And so having EJ is so key to me. And then, we're still talking to some of the guys on the Nebraska staff. There's great coaches here. And so hopefully we can, just continue to add to that staff over the coming couple of days.
Is Phil Snow going to be joining you? Because that's been your guy for so many years.
I know. And I'm so proud of Phil. Phil came to a defense that really had not many players left over. We struggled through the first year in the NFL. We had a top two, we had the number two defense in the league last year. He built this defense. Then, unfortunately he was fired with me. I'm trying to convince him to put the golf clubs down and come join me here in Nebraska. So stay tuned. He'll probably have some people in the NFL that are trying to get him to come with him as well. And so I love the man. He's one of the best football coaches I've ever been around. And he's a big reason why we've had success.
Two more for you. Every Nebraska fan will absolutely destroy me if I don't ask you this question. Mickey Joseph, where does it stand on that with the job that he did? A lot of people want to see him stay in Lincoln.
Yeah, Mickey's a tremendous coach. These players care about him. We're him and I are talking back and forth, just in terms of is it a fit? We'll probably have some clarity here in the next couple of days. But I respect so much what he did, just watching him. That team could have, fallen apart this year.
Yeah.
And he and the leaders on this team, and then that great win over Iowa at the end of the year, a lot of respect for him. So you guys will have to just stay tuned and we'll see what happens.
Last thing I'll ask you, Nebraska football coach Matt Rhule, let's say I'm a recruit. You're in my living room. How do you sell me to kind of join Nebraska and be a Cornhusker for the next 4 years?
Well, I would just say to Zach, if you want to get an elite education, if you want to be pushed in every aspect of your life to be the best that you can be as a man, as a student, and then if you want to win championships and go play in the National Football League, nobody does it better than the University of Nebraska. Nobody does it better than our staff. We've taken all kinds of players from all kinds of places and turned them into, great, great, great NFL players. And, any team, if you're talented enough, can get you to the NFL. What I'm proud about for the guys that have gone through our process is, they stay in the NFL. The coaches call me and say, man, I'll tell you what, these guys are such pros. And so if you want to maximize yourself as a student, as a man, and as a football player, both in college and then as a pro, this is where you need to be. You need to come to be a Nebraska Cornhusker.
He's the head football coach in Nebraska. Matt, once again, congratulations to you, Julie, Brian, and your two daughters. Really happy for your family, and good luck the rest of the way in building this again.
Thank you, my friend.
Throughout the 60s and 70s, cops hunted down key figures of the Dixie Mafia, including its enigmatic ringleader, Kirksey Nix.
I'm interested in making money. I'm not interested in hurting people.
15 years into Kirksey's life sentence, the Dixie Mafia was practically folklore, but that would soon change. I'm Jed Lipinski. This is Gone South, a documentary podcast from C13 Originals, a Cadence 13 studio. Season 2, The Dixie Mafia. Available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Is there something really absurd that skeeves you out?
Getting a paper cut on my eyeball?
A fear you can't shake?
I'm going to leak ocular fluid down my cheeks. It's going to go into my mouth and I will perish.
Whatever scares you, I want to talk about it. Join me, Larry Mullins, on my new podcast, Your Weirdest Fears. Listen and subscribe to Your Weirdest Fears on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Throughout the 60s and 70s, cops hunted down key figures of the Dixie Mafia, including its enigmatic ringleader, Kirksey Nix.
I'm interested in making money. I'm not interested in hurting people.
15 years into Kirksey's life sentence, the Dixie Mafia was practically folklore, but that would soon change. I'm Jed Lipinski. This is Gone South, a documentary podcast from C13 Originals, a Cadence 13 studio. Season 2, The Dixie Mafia. Available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show. For your daily news brief, we get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Odell Beckham Jr., according to Adam Schefter, is going to be kicking off his free agency tour mañana. And it's going to be a visit to the Giants, then Friday in Buffalo with the Bills, and then goes to Dallas on Monday as he's visiting Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys. I saw a video tonight, Hickey, of Odell Beckham. I don't know where he is, but he was boarding a plane. And supposedly, he got on the plane and was not thrown off, to our knowledge yet. As over the weekend, he was thrown off a plane. And one report said he was in and out of consciousness and wasn't buckling his seatbelt. And they had to go back to the gate and all that. So who knows what actually happened, but I think Odell is on his way en route to New York right now. Let's hear Von Miller, who says Odell Beckham Jr. will be visiting the Bills this week, courtesy of the Voncast.
OBJ's taking a visit this Friday. Yeah, he's going to be here. Everybody said, everybody was like, oh, he's the Cowboys. Hey, man, it ain't over till it's over. You know, he's going to see the Giants, us, and the Cowboys. And I think when he comes here, I don't think he's going to leave.
So let me ask you this, Hickey. When he's at the Giants, will he leave the Giants facility tomorrow, make his way or attempt to make his way to Buffalo if he doesn't get thrown off a plane again?
Yes.
Okay. When he is in Buffalo, will he be able to get on a plane, not get kicked off the plane, and make his way to Dallas? Or will Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott, Von Miller and company find a way to make sure that Odell Beckham is going to be a Buffalo Bill?
Actually, I think neither is going to happen. Third option, Jerry Jones flies there himself on his private plane, picks him up and makes sure he doesn't get in trouble and makes sure he gets on that plane and come down to the star.
That's a great point that you just brought up. And I know that you probably meant that a little bit sarcastically. If there's one of these owners that is going to get on a plane and get the private jet to Odell, it has to be Jerry Jones. And I think Jerry Jones may want the drama. Jerry Jones may want him to get kicked off another flight, and then so he could just have more ammunition to go sign the guy. Because it seems wherever there's drama, Jerry Jones is right there waiting to eat up whatever whatever comes out of that drama situation.
I can see Jerry Jones like sitting in the lobby of the Bills facility, like waiting for the meeting to be done to pick him up. I can see Jerry just sitting waiting.
Where is he going? It seems like it's Dallas. But I will say this. The fact that Buffalo is getting a meeting, and I thought it was going to be Buffalo weeks ago, and then all the conversation the last 2 weeks, maybe it's desperation by Jerry Jones to feeling that he has to put a little extra work in for this one. It does seem as if the narrative the last 2 weeks has shifted to the Dallas Cowboys, just because Jerry's been the most vocal. But the Bills are one of the best-run organizations in football right now. And you know they're not going to be sitting there chirping away like Jerry Jones doing 9,000 interviews a week and basically just talking in circles and exposing what their plans are. So I would still, just because the conversations have all been Dallas, but I would rank them Dallas 1, Buffalo 2, and then the Giants 3 in terms of what I think Odell's going to do. But if I was Odell, I would sign with the Bills. You have, that's your best shot to win another Super Bowl. I know it, you're not going to get the most targets as you would in with the Giants. That's where you get the most targets. Or Dallas, you would get the fewest targets. But you look at that team, you can get a lot of favorable matchups because there's going to be a greater point of emphasis on Stephon Diggs, who's one of the better wide receivers in the league. Gabe Davis, guys like Dawson Knox. There's just so many weapons on that Buffalo Bills team.
I would agree the best fit for him would be Buffalo. I just don't see Jerry Jones taking no as an answer.
Would you, let me ask you this. You would think this is a one-year deal. Jerry Jones is the one out of the three that would be desperate enough to give him a multi-year deal.
Yes.
To maybe sweeten the pot a little bit. Darius Slay says the Packers' future is bright with Jordan Love. This courtesy of the Big Slay podcast.
As a defense, when A.Y. goes out, we feel great. You know what I'm saying? That's the greatest quarter, what a greatest quarterback ever. So if he goes out, we got to go out here really get at him. You know, the D-line get a little hungrier because they be like, okay, got a young buck coming in. I can go get out to the quarterback because, you know, A-Rod makes a lot of checks and a lot of communication at the line of scrimmage. That's hard to stop. So young buck come in, actually did a very, very solid job, man. They got a Green Bay, got a bright, bright future, like a bright one. Because Buddy was slinging it. I ain't gonna lie. Like, he low key looked like A-Rod. Like, he'd been learning a lot. And you can see, like, the gunslinging mentality he had, just like him. Like, they, with the quick release, the flick, and the picking the back leg up, he's copying and pasting him for sure. Which, that's just a great player to be copying and pasting from.
I think in that game, he had 11 passes that were thrown by Jordan Love. For a guy that's been a veteran in Darius Slay, that's some serious praise off of one game this season and not even a full game coming from one Darius Slay about Jordan Love. Like, don't get me wrong, Jordan Love was good in the small opportunity, but I don't think I would be, if I'm a Packers fan right now, just in love with Jordan Love and all of a sudden thinking that he's definitely going to be the guy, but that's a pretty strong endorsement, to say the least, by Darius Slay, and a pretty valuable one from a heck of a player in this league.
One quarter play, scored on both drives. I don't think he's lying, you know?
Yeah, but that he's going to be great for...
Wow.
He made it seem as... The tone he gave off there was that it was going to go from Favre to Rodgers, and then Love's going to be that next Hall of Fame quarterback.
Yes.
I'm not ready to go there yet. Let's go to Patrick Peterson. He says Kyler Murray is extremely selfish. This courtesy of the All Things Covered podcast. Everyone's got a podcast these days in the NFL. Go ahead.
Kyler Murray is talking about, and I don't like how he's doing that. I think he should keep some things privately, but it tells me he doesn't care about his head coach. And he's putting everything on the head coach, basically saying
Kyler Murray don't care about nobody but Kyler Murray. That's just a matter of the fact.
Now, Patrick Peterson was there in Arizona briefly. You know, with Kyler Murray, I think that opinion is valid. And I think that was Brian McFadden, right? Our pal Brian McFadden with them because they're cousins and they do the podcast together. He said at the beginning, yeah, he is putting it on the coach. He's fighting with the coach on the sideline. Said the scheme was bleep. I can't even say the word on the radio. Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury, we thought were attached at the hip. Kyler Murray's now saying, I got to distance myself from Cliff Kingsbury because I'm not playing well, so instead of taking accountability, I'm going to blame it on Cliff. I'm not saying Cliff isn't deserving of some blame, but I don't know. Kyler Murray always, ever since the whole contract situation with the social media, seems like he plays the victim card a lot. And now he goes on social media, he saw this, and he responded to Patrick Peterson saying, this isn't true. You on some weird bleep. You got my number. If you really felt like this, as a big bro or mentor, you're supposed to call me and tell me, not drag me so your podcast could grow. Now, isn't this hypocritical? You just said the coach, the offensive scheme that the coach is drawing up was bleep. Shouldn't then Kyler Murray keep that in-house in private and not trash the coach and throw him under the bus if he actually did care about the coach? But funny how that's all reversed when people start to point the finger at Kyler Murray. Hot take, Iggy.
And he's playing the victim card in the offseason when, you know, the entire contract situation was going down and forgetting, like, who was the one who started in the first place by scrubbing all the social media.
He brought so much unwanted attention. No one was talking about that playoff game. after the week it happened, which it was a terrible look for him. He was horrible. And then he unfollows the team, takes all the pictures down of him in a Cardinals uniform. It's like, this is your franchise quarterback? This is your leader?
Has his agent, you know, put out the demands as well. We gave a great contract offer. They cared about Kyler. They take this offer. We care about the team.
It's always rubbed me the wrong way with him. Remember when he went on the Dan Patrick show and everyone was talking about his baseball future and he just handled that interview horribly? There's just a lot of situations here, and that was the start. Where when he's on Twitter or he's in front of the media, he just doesn't handle it the right way that you expect from a franchise quarterback. Nick Chubb says the team is looking forward to Deshaun Watson's return this week. You do have the Browns going up against the Texans in Houston.
I mean, we're all excited. We've all waited for a long time for him to come back. But, you know, the same thing. You know, we got to go out there, got to work, can't get too distracted by anything, and keep the main thing.
And we'll see how that plays out this weekend. The Browns are going to win the game. The question is just by how much. The Texans absolutely stink, but you wonder how many times they're going to throw the ball with Deshaun Watson when the strength of that team, even though Watson's a heck of a quarterback in terms of on-the-field play, the strength of that team, though, is still Nick Chubb. I wonder if they – like, how many throws you think Watson gets this week? Does it get into the 30s, or do you kind of just say, let's run the football, we have Kareem Hunt, we have Nick Chubb, and we're going to slowly ease you back in because you haven't played in 2 years and we'll give you like 25 passing attempts or something like that.
I will say 19. That's 19. My temp number.
Wow. That doesn't seem like a hot take.
Houston also stinks.
Yeah, that's true.
So Nick Chubb should run through them like butter.
And you should be up 2-3 touchdowns in the second half. So you just keep on running the ball. And finally, big game this weekend between the Bengals and the Chiefs. Bengals beat the Chiefs twice last year. Jamar Chase says he held himself out of last week's game against Tennessee.
I felt good moving around, finally picking up speed, you know, running straight line. Finally get some cuts in at the end of the week, so I felt good.
Did you feel comfortable playing if they wanted you to play against Tennessee, or did you?
No, that's what I told Zach. I told him I didn't feel too comfortable yet. Not just comfortable, just, you know, wanted to give myself another week of preparation and be ready for the next game if I had a chance to.
Yeah, it seems like he's going to be playing this week if you're able to decide, yeah, I want to hold myself out just to be safe to get you set for that big matchup against the Kansas City Chiefs. Also shows you a little bit what Jamar Chase thinks of the Titans compared to the Kansas City Chiefs. Just a little bit. All right, that's the News Brief. Zach Gilch, CBS Sports Radio.
What makes your skin crawl? No matter how absurd, I want to know.
Tails without fur on them, such as rats or possums.
I'm Larry Mullins, the host of a new podcast called Your Weirdest Fears. You send me your fear.
I'm just so weirded out about the texture and how they can just move around and flop.
And then I go to the experts to learn how to overcome them. Listen and subscribe to Your Weirdest Fears on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Throughout the 60s and 70s, cops hunted down key figures of the Dixie Mafia, including its enigmatic ringleader, Kirksey Nix.
I'm interested in making money. I'm not interested in hurting people.
15 years into Kirksey's life sentence, the Dixie Mafia was practically folklore, but that would soon change. I'm Jed Lipinski. This is Gone South, a documentary podcast from C13 Originals, a Cadence 13 studio. Season 2, The Dixie Mafia. Available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What makes your skin crawl? No matter how absurd, I want to know.
Tails without fur on them, such as rats or possums.
I'm Larry Mullins, the host of a new podcast called Your Weirdest Fears. You send me your fear.
I'm just so weirded out about the texture and how they can just move around and flop.
And then I go to the experts to learn how to overcome them. Listen and subscribe to Your Weirdest Fears on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts from.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Now, I don't know if Peter Schwartz, who has done updates here on the network for years, since the inception, I think he was actually the first voice heard on CBS Sports Radio. Is that accurate? Is my information correct on that?
I believe he gave the first sports update at midnight on, January 1st or January 2nd? I believe so.
Yeah, and we're about to turn 10 years old as a network in CBS Sports Radio. So the first voice of the network in Peter Schwartz, he was at a restaurant on Long Island, Miller's Ale House, which is a chain all across the country. And Peter Schwartz left the restaurant. And he walked out in disgust because I guess something happened. The food wasn't good or the service was horrible. And then someone spilt ranch on him or something like that. Now, I don't know if he was eating wings, and maybe that could be a better question. Peter, was it bone-in or boneless? Because then if it's boneless, you had every right to get thrown out of the restaurant because you shouldn't have boneless wings. But I don't know. Maybe Pete's trying to lose some weight or something, and he was having a little salad, and he wanted some ranch dressing on the salad. That could be a possibility. I don't know. I don't know. Peter Schwartz doesn't come off to me as someone that's going to be eating a salad at a Miller's Ale House. But if he was having wings and he was using ranch over blue cheese, that's another infraction because you got to go blue cheese. So were you made aware of Peter Schwartz? I don't know. You couldn't miss it, right? It was all over social media. He was very annoyed, and he said that the manager spoke to him in a very rude tone, and that's why he was disgusted in front of his family and walked right out and said he will never go back. But he would go to other Miller House locations, just different ones on Long Island.
So it's not, you're not
I've been
really
to the one in Comac, by the way. That's not the one he was at. It's fun. Fun place. Good place to watch game. Good food. All that.
Absolutely not a place you go for a salad. That is for sure.
Yeah.
And also, I guess he can't really escape the ranch tripping on him. See what happened today.
Wait, what?
You know, the dummy that, you know, lives around here at 345 Hudson Street?
Wait, what did you say before that in that transition? Because
he couldn't escape getting ranch dumped on him.
Okay. Why? What happened today?
Well, there is a plastic dummy.
There's a mannequin in our office.
A mannequin, if you want to call him the proper name. I apologize, dummy. The mannequin, to be more respectful, that lives
here.
He's
sensitive, please. We live in a sensitive time.
Kind of like Toy Story comes alive when no one's around. There's a video going out, or maybe soon to be released, of the mannequin maybe taking a little tip from Miller's Ale House, bringing his own ranch and getting a little too close to Peter Schwartz this morning.
So he got ranch dumped on him again, by this time not even a real person,
now,
a mannequin.
Now, technically not dumped on him, near him, on his desk that Peter is working at. It's like inches away. Did not get on his clothes.
Oh.
But it was, you know, inches from where he was.
Does Schwartz get the benefit of the doubt here? Or is this him just trying, as DA and company they've done a segment, and I don't know if they still do it, but it's called Meat on the Bone, where they just kind of expose him for all the things that he tries to get for free. Is this a ploy where Miller Ale's House then reaches out to him? Pete, we apologize for the bad experience. Here's a $100 gift card. Take the family on us, and we'll make sure that everything's good. Is that what this is, or do you think that the service was that bad and everything was so terrible that's why you walked out? Like, I've been in some bad restaurant experiences. I don't know. I can't remember ever walking out of a restaurant. And I've had some bad service. I remember once, one year on my birthday, we went to a place that I did not want to go to. But someone really wanted to go to that place, so we went there. And it's my birthday. You would think we would where I would want to go, but it wasn't the case.
Holy cow.
So we went to this place. It was an hour wait. And they told us we had a reservation. And it was an hour wait still. And we sit down, and the menu was terrible. I don't know why we went to this place. So I got a burger. And on the burger that I wanted, it had mushrooms. And I'm allergic to mushrooms. So after an hour wait when you had a reservation, and the food took forever to come out, I said, I cannot have mushrooms in the burger. Please don't put mushrooms in the burger. Burger comes, mushrooms. Now, I said to the waiter or waitress, I forget who it was. This was like 6 years ago. I said, no mushrooms. Like, please send it back. And my friend that I was with goes, like, you could have killed him. Like, this is terrible. And even then, I felt awkward. I don't like making a scene at a restaurant. I really don't. Like, if the service stinks and it's a horrible time, then I think you just take your L, you pay the bill, and then you leave. I don't think I would ever storm out of a restaurant. Now, if you do recall, we went on a family vacation 2 years ago. I've told you this story. And the staff was so rude to my father. And they brought out nothing right. And the order was horrible in the terms of them bringing it out. You brought out the main course before the salads and all that. And then the waiter got really snippy and nasty with my dad, who's like one of the most polite and kindest people on the planet. And then I saw my dad get very angry, and I was, let's just say, a little intoxicated. I ran to the other side of the street because I just sensed that something was going to go down, and I had no interest of seeing what was going to go down happening. And just really never anything came out of that other than my dad writing a nasty Yelp review, which I thought was very intriguing. But I can't ever remember.
Because Schwartz walked out of the restaurant and didn't even pay the bill, which is very on brand for Peter Schwartz.
Oh, he didn't pay the bill.
I don't know that for sure.
I guess when you walk out of a restaurant.
I'm assuming he did not pay the bill.
Right.
Because he said, I got up and we left.
Yeah.
The food was horrible and all that stuff. So is that Schwartz that, like, do you think, let me ask you this. Did Schwartz take a few bites, got the belly full, and then elected to say, yeah, the food was okay. I could talk my way out of this. You know, I was the first voice on CBS Sports Radio, Peter Schwartz, and I'm not going to have to pay for this. Was there maybe something like a hidden reason behind this, that it's not as factual as Peter Schwartz is having this play out?
I will give Peter the benefit of the doubt for this reason. He kind of gave away any leverage of trying to get something for free by saying, I'm going to go to other locations.
Yeah.
If you said, I'm never going to go back to this place again, they could try to win you over. If you're the store manager or the manager of this chain location, mm-hmm. In this one town, look, you're not trying to win his business back. And if you are someone who works for Miller's Ale House, I mean, when Peter says, I'll go to other locations, are you really that worried? Like, honestly?
Probably not.
So I think if he was angling for...
Oh, you know what? He's such a coward. He deleted the tweet. I'm trying to find the tweet, and I can't find it. So I go to Giannotti's Twitter page, who used to work on the network and now works down the hall at WFAN, because I know that Giannotti doesn't tweet a lot. And I know he tweeted about this last night, and he quote tweeted Ranch on Schwartz. And it goes, the tweet was deleted by the tweet author.
Wow, that's pathetic.
When you delete the tweet after trashing a place, that makes me think two things. One, you kind of look back and said, I was really in the wrong. Or two, they called you up and they offered you a freebie, and then you had no guts and you
kept the... But if they offered him a freebie, he would have definitely tweeted about it. Really appreciate the great hospitality of at Miller's Ale. You know, this is very nice. We'll give him a second chance.
That's to delete the tweet. That's a bad job. That's a bad job by Peter Schwartz. So the Hickey family has never been in a restaurant. You have a large family.
Somehow we have not walked out. That would have been a big storm session.
You know what? Maybe we should pay Schwartz a visit. We're both from Long Island. Maybe we should go to Miller's Ale House with Peter Schwartz. My treat. We'll call up Mraz, you know, have DA make the trip from upstate, and we'll all go together and just see if we could get Peter Schwartz real experience at a Miller's Ale House.
Oh, no, he's not allowed in here. Yeah. It's like the other way around. Like, they kicked like him out.
It's like the no-fly list.
I walked out. Oh, yeah, no, you didn't walk in. We kicked you out.
Yeah. You're not allowed in here, big boy.
There's his face with a big, you know, circle with a line through it.
Or now, when he walks into the restaurant at Miller's Ale House, they have, like, an alarm that goes off. And they just have a bucket of ranch sauce that just gets dumped on his head. Maybe that's what happens now with Peter Schwartz. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. The head football coach of South Carolina, the Gamecocks. Shane Beamer going to join us next after two big victories. Tennessee 1 week, followed up by Clemson.
Throughout the 60s and 70s, cops hunted down key figures of the Dixie Mafia, including its enigmatic ringleader, Kirksey Nix.
I'm interested in making money. I'm not interested in hurting people.
15 years into Kirksey's life sentence, the Dixie Mafia was practically folklore, but that would soon change. I'm Jed Lipinski. This is Gone South, a documentary podcast from C13 Originals, a Cadence 13 studio. Season 2, The Dixie Mafia. Available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Throughout the 60s and 70s, cops hunted down key figures of the Dixie Mafia, including its enigmatic ringleader, Kirksey Nix.
I'm interested in making money. I'm not interested in hurting people.
15 years into Kirksey's life sentence, the Dixie Mafia was practically folklore, but that would soon change. I'm Jed Lipinski. This is Gone South, a documentary podcast from C13 Originals, a Cadence 13 studio. Season 2, The Dixie Mafia. Available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Is there something really absurd that skeeves you out?
Getting a paper cut on my eyeball?
A fear you can't shake?
I'm going to leak ocular fluid down my cheeks. It's going to go into my mouth and I will perish.
Whatever scares you, I want to talk about it. Join me, Larry Mullins, on my new podcast, Your Weirdest Fears. Listen and subscribe to Your Weirdest Fears on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts from.